right. Something out of Braveheart there. That's pretty cool. All right. 1 Kings chapter 12. Hey, look, it's good to see you. It's great to be back. I had a great time. I went up and took one of my kids to a college orientation and then took a few days. And you're in trouble today because I'm rested. And looking forward to share with you today, though, really. You know, we've been in this series that we just call Kings. I like to do things like this in the summer. You know, in the summer, I feel like, you know, people, although it's great to see you guys today. Thank you. I appreciate you being here on this holiday weekend. But during the summer, I like to do something from the Old Testament, usually a character. And I love to talk about sections of the scripture that I know that a lot of times people don't spend a lot of time in. And let you see, because understand that God puts a lot of these things in the scriptures for us to learn and for us to understand and know more about who He is and those things. And so there's this period during the that I think is a lot of times people don't read much and don't know a lot about. It's this period called the Kings. And when you take a look at these kings, it was a time in the nation of Israel of which God chose them to do great things through them. But again, not all of everything they did was great. And so anyway, this is what we're gonna be talking about. So I over the last couple of weeks, a few weeks ago, we during the first week, we talked about that the people wanted a king. Okay, and that God didn't want them to have a king. He wanted God was their king, right? And he had you know, judges and different things. But they wanted a king, they wanted a king. So God gave him a king. They had Saul. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. That was a disaster. And then eventually, when Saul let, then David came along. Well, we're going to skip David because I did David one whole summer here a few summers ago. And then we talked about Solomon, right? And then Solomon kind of came on the scene and did real well at the beginning, right? And didn't do real well at the end. And so it became kind of a tough thing. You know, a lot of times you take a look at Solomon, he did so well in the fact that when he was asked, when God asked him, "What can I do for you?" He wanted wisdom. He wanted the ability to be able to know right from wrong and to lead and to rule, different things like that. So, but it comes to today, and I'm just going ahead and tell you, I didn't realize this when I was putting this together, but today is a powerful message. And I always like to say, not because I'm doing it, but because it is just powerful to hear. And a little thought-provoking, also perhaps a little convicting when you take a look at yourself. Because when we talk about decisions, you see, we have this thought, especially in our country, we have this thought that when we make our decisions, that it doesn't affect anybody else but us. And it's just not the truth. And the more influence you have, or if you will, the more authority you have, the more impact your decisions have on other people. But not only on other people, but on generations to come. Here's a thought. You're heading down the road, right? And you come upon a fork in the road. And you can take this way or that way. But when you take, say, "I'm going to take this way," whatever reason you make a decision, okay? You head down this road, and you come to another fork in the road. Now, think about this. You would have never even made it to this decision if you hadn't made that one back there. And now listen to this. Also, you would have never gotten to where you got unless people before you that are beyond your control had made decisions they had made. So you are affecting. Nobody likes to think like that. Nobody likes to think about that. Why? Because we don't want to have to think we're responsible. It's kind of like most people today. I want to be in charge, but I don't want to be responsible. Okay, now how's that work? I don't know, but that's what I want. I want to be able to do what I want to do, but I don't want to be responsible for it. we like to think that that exists, but that doesn't exist. That's why today is a little more of a hard-hitting, thought-provoking kind of a look. So what happened? Well, Solomon dies. You know, Solomon comes to the end of his life and he dies. And imagine being the guy that replaces Solomon. I mean, here's a guy. I mean, again, he didn't end well, but he did raise Israel to a point to where they were. And I'm here to tell you, they were the power at that time, the national power, obviously world power. And so, but the guy that came after Solomon was a guy by the name of Rehoboam. And we know a little bit about him. We're going to talk about two guys today, Rehoboam and Jeroboam, and they are not related and they're not twins. All right. So, but there were two guys, and it was something you're going to see about these two. And then I'm going to share something with you that'll help you understand reading part of this section of Scripture and understanding it. All right. So as you think about today, again, 1 Kings, okay? 1 Kings chapter 12 is where we're going to be today. Okay? And decisions is our thoughts. All right? Decisions are our thoughts. All right. Number one, I like to give you some notes just to kind of give you the outline of the passage. Number one is what I'm going to call self-centered decision. A self-centered decision. There's one decision that Rehoboam here makes that changes the course of history. Okay? And you're going to take a look at it. And when we take a look at it, you're going to see why he made the decision and what we can learn from that. See, when I like to share from this section of the Scripture, I'm not here just to give you information. This is not a history lesson. I like for you to know what the Scriptures say that are there, and then I like you to know how that applies to you personally. And you're going to see today what distinguishes someone who is a true follower of God and those who just are in name only. Because you're going to see it all comes down to your decision making. Because the decisions that you make, it doesn't matter what you say you believe. If it doesn't affect your decision making, then I'm just being honest with you, it's just talk. Lots of people talk religious stuff. Well, I believe. But if it doesn't affect your decision making, I'm here to tell you, you don't believe it. Even though if it comes out of your mouth. And you're going to see how then what you believe should affect direction in your life if you truly believe it. Right? So this thought of a self-centered decision. Let's see what happened. Okay, take a look at chapter 12 and verse 1. Chapter 12 and verse 1 says this. Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel had come to Shechem to make him king. Okay, so Solomon's dead. And they had all the, you know, the royal funeral and the mournings and, you know, all the stuff. And it finally came time, it was Rehoboam's time, right? He gets to be king. He gets to go play king. And he's probably been waiting a long time because if you remember, Solomon took over being king at a fairly young age. So Rehoboam could be, you know, mid-30s to mid-40s, somewhere within there. And so finally he goes to Shechem and all Israel turns out, you know, it's a big day, you know, it's a big day when the new king is crowned. And so everybody shows up and it's going to be a big day, you know, and Rehoboam finally says, finally, I get to be in charge. And that's the problem of having a king. You know, we were just talking about this earlier in our prayer time for the service, is that, you know, whenever you centralize power into one person, things can either go very well or very bad. That's our form of government. You know, and I know there's a complaint about gridlock. But when you think about it, that's because one person doesn't have all the decision-making power. Because when you centralize it in one person, it can go downhill fast or it can go uphill fast. It all depends on who you get. But we've talked about this in the past weeks. And when you put this together, when you think about the king here, you're going to see a decision that really changes things. All right, let's continue to read about it. Look at verse 2. Verse 2 says, and as soon as Jeroboam, now he is no relation, okay? As soon as Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, heard of it, for he was still in Egypt, where he had fled from King Solomon. Then Jeroboam returned from Egypt. Okay, now who is Rehoboam? Rehoboam is Solomon's son. He's the guy that's taken over as king. Who is Jeroboam? Jeroboam's a guy that Solomon had used in his reign, but he was very talented. And so Solomon let him kind of oversee different areas. And then he began to gather followers, and a prophet came by and told him he was going to be king, at least a part of Israel. And then Solomon tried to kill him, so he fled to Egypt. And this Jeroboam guy was waiting until Solomon died, and then he came back. Now, so we're going to this coronation, and Jeroboam, okay, let's see what he does. It's interesting. And they sent and they called him, and Jeroboam and all the assembly of Israel came and said to Rehoboam, "Your father made our yoke heavy. Now, therefore, lighten the hard service of your father and his heavy yoke on us, and we will serve you." He said to them, "Go away for 3 days, then come back again." So the people went away. All right, setting the stage. We got Rehoboam, right? We're in town. This is not just a one-day event, okay, where all the dignitaries fly in. Okay, this is something that could go on for weeks. And so during the festivities, a group of them came to Rehoboam, the new king, with kind of Jeroboam, kind of the guy who was the ringleader. And he looks at Rehoboam and says, "Listen, we need you to lighten up." Right? Because under Solomon, as wise as he was, if you remember, toward the end of his life, it got kind of bad. He was building all kinds of things and forced labor and taxes. And see, when you've got one guy in charge, then he basically does whatever he wants to do, and everybody else does what he says, no matter what. And so Solomon, especially at the beginning, everybody was fine. He was awesome because he had some real wisdom about him. But toward the last 10 years or so, he was building these temples for his foreign pagan wives. He was doing all of these things, spending way too much, just basically doing whatever he wanted to do. And the people got tired of it. So when the people come to Rehoboam, it's a legitimate complaint, saying, "Listen, we need you to lighten up here. We need you to lighten up on the taxes. We need you to lighten up on taking our sons and daughters, to serve in your courts. We need some relief here. And if you give us some relief, we'll serve you. We'll serve you forever." Okay? And so Rehoboam kind of sits back and he says, "Okay, well, guys, go away. I need some time to think on what you're saying. And you guys go away for three days and then come back." Okay? So obviously this picture, these are grievances, and it was legitimate requests. Take a look at verse 6. Interesting how this works. "Then King Rehoboam took counsel." Now, let me just throw this out to you. You may not call it getting counsel, but who do you talk to? Who do you get advice from? They have far more influence on you than you can imagine. Okay? But we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. So what did he do first? All right, he took counsel with who? Okay? The old guys. Okay, let's talk the old guys first. And so he goes to the old guys, and who are these guys? These are the guys who had stood before Solomon. Okay, while his father was still alive. In other words, these were the guys who had the experience. It's always amazing how the younger group thinks the older group don't know what they're talking about. And a lot of times they're right, all right? But there's a lot of things that you can learn from experience. That is, those who have run the race ahead of you. And they know what to tell you and what to expect. And so he calls these guys in first. These are the ones who'd been with Solomon. These were the ones who saw the wisdom of Solomon, but they also saw Solomon go downhill. So they had some real great eye gate right? And so he said to them, hey, how do you advise me to answer these people? Okay? So look now at verse 7. And here's what the older guys said. And they said to him, if you will be a servant to this people today and serve them and speak good words to them when you answer them, they will be your servants forever. Okay? One, two-sentence advice. Hey, Rehoboam, you want some wisdom here? Here's what you should do. First of all, okay, you need to see yourself as a servant of the people. Yes, you are in charge. But how do you see yourself? Do you see yourself as a servant of the people, or do you see yourself as in charge and that everybody is serving you? You hear what they're telling him? And then if he says, listen to them, they need to know that you care about them. You need to speak good words to them. All right? But see, here's the problem. Here's the problem with the whole king thing. Here's the reason God told them that they didn't need to have a king. It's because how do kings see themselves? They see themselves as in charge. And they see themselves as not accountable to anybody. But the true look of it should be, if you truly are in charge, you have a responsibility to the people. The best kings down through history, in Israel's history, were the ones who saw themselves, first of all, as a servant of God, but also as a servant of the people. But I'm here to tell you guys, whenever somebody wants to be in charge, whenever somebody pushes to be in charge, I'm here to tell you, they rarely ever do it well. If you know what I'm talking about. It's an incredible thing. So what did these guys tell him? They were talking to him about a mindset of who he was supposed to be. And here's what this looks like, Rambo. All right. But what did he do? It says, but he abandoned the counsel that the old guys gave him. Okay? And what else did he do? Let's take a look at what he did next. All right, but he abandoned the counsel the old men gave him, and he took counsel with the young men, here we go, who had grown up with him and stood before him. Oh, I'm going to talk to my buddies I grew up with. All right, and that's where he got counsel from next. Let's see what they said. All right. Verse 9. And he said to them, what do you advise that we answer this people who have said to me, lighten the yoke that your father put on us? And the young men who had grown up with him said to him, thus shall you speak to this people who said to you, your father made our yoke heavy, but you lighten it for us. Thus shall you say to them, my little finger is thicker than my father's thighs. And now, whereas your father laid on you a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions. Now, see, these buddies of his, they've been growing up with him since he was a kid. And they've all been waiting. Don't you imagine the conversations they had down at Starbucks? And they were all talking. And they all look at Rehoboam and say, hey, when you get to be king, hey, we're all going to have a great time. Oh, man, the king, it's going to be a big party when you become the king. And we're all your buddies, right? And we get to be on it. I get to be Minister of Finance. You get to be Minister of Agriculture. I mean, you know, they've been talking about this. Can't wait till Dad dies, you know. Don't want him to die too soon. But when he dies, I get to be in charge. So they've been waiting all this time to be in charge. And now, you got a bunch of old guys that are telling you, hey, listen, you need to consider yourself a servant of the people. But that's not what I want. I want to be in charge. I don't want anyone telling me what to do. These people that come in here lighten our load. Hey, last time I checked, I'm king and you're not. Right? So it showed you the decision that he made was a self-centered one. I don't want to be a servant of the people. I want to be in charge of the people. And that's why I always try to tell you, those people that want to be in charge, that always want to be in charge, rarely ever do it well. It's amazing how it works. Because you give somebody in charge, if they don't see themselves as a servant of what they're doing, the people under them are eventually going to get sick of it. It's an amazing thing how this works. And the reason I shared this, I realized it last night. You don't have to be in the workforce very often. You don't have to do much to realize that these principles are the truth. And that little Lord Ha-Ha doesn't work. If you're one of these bosses, I know we got a lot of bosses in the room, but if you're one of these bosses that comes in and yells and screams all the time, not to say you shouldn't yell and scream sometimes, but if you yell and scream all the time and it's all about who you are and what you want, I'm here to tell you, you've got miserable people working for you. It's the truth. It's just the way it works. But I tell you what, you look back on some of the people, and they're rare, but if you ever find a leader who truly cares about those people underneath him more than he does himself, you'll die for that person, won't you? If you really have a boss that cares about you, looks out for you, and sees you as someone that they're trying to help you, I mean, I'm here to tell you, you'll die for that person. But the guy that's the guy or the gal that's in charge and likes to play being in charge, it's usually a disaster. Nobody likes. And don't give your best effort for. It's an amazing thing. So the more I look at the scriptures, the more it becomes alive in front of me when we understand, even in leadership, what is leadership? Our world tells you it's somebody who's driven and in charge. And I understand that's all right. But I'm here to tell you, I have found the greatest leaders, not just in church leadership, but even in corporate. It's like the book Good to Great. It's a secular book on leadership, CEO leadership. And they found the most effective leadership comes with humility. Now, what is humility? Humility, to me, as you take a look at the scriptures, okay, there is one virtue in all the scriptures from Genesis to Revelation. There's one virtue that sticks out high above all the others. That, not saying that the other virtues in the scriptures aren't important, but the one that seems to be the most important in the scriptures to me is the whole concept of humbleness or humility. What is the concept of humility? Humility says basically is being others oriented, caring more about others and there than you do yourself. And I mean, there's other ways to explain it, but I just want you to see that most of the time when people think of leadership, that's not what they think about. And yet I'm here to tell you that is what these older guys said. Hey, let me tell you what, there's where your dad went wrong. And that's why these people are complaining like they are, and that not all complaints are legitimate, but these complaints are legitimate. So if you'll speak kind to them, if you'll be a servant of them, they'll serve you forever. Guys, that's good wisdom. But Rehoboam doesn't take it. He listens to his buddies. You know, and they go out and they tell these people after 3 days, hey, guess what? My little finger is going to be thicker than my father's thigh. Right? You think dad put it on you. In fact, I want all of you to know that none of you are telling me what to do. I'm telling you what you do because I'm the king. And he took that type of attitude. People had enough. Right? And I'm here to tell you this one decision that Rehoboam makes changes the course of history for the nation of Israel. Isn't that incredible? Well, that's what he does. Right? That's what he does. Take a look. Let's continue. Let's just read down through the rest of them. Verse 12. So Jeroboam and all the people came to Rehoboam the third day, and the king says, come to me again the third day. And the king answered the people harshly, and forsaking the counsel, okay, of the old men had given him, he spoke to them according to the counsel of the young men, saying, my father made your yoke heavy, but I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions. So the king did not listen to the people, for it was the turn, for it was a turn of affairs brought on by the Lord that he might fulfill the word by the Lord spoke by Ahijah the Shilonite to Jeroboam the son of Nebat. All right. Now, number two, is the kingdom divided? You know, and going back to that other thought, guys, I can't tell you how important it is, the counsel that you not only go seek, but the counsel that you receive. You know, none of us, all of us need counselors. All of us, we don't call them counselors, we call them friends. All of us need people that we can trust to get advice from. All of us do. Why? Because none of us sees everything. Even Solomon, the wisest person who ever lived, had counselors and advisors. So everybody in the room needs them. But remember this. Who you go to or whom you go to will have the incredible more impact in your life than you can imagine. And most of the time, when you get people advice from them, are they giving you that advice because they truly love you? Or are they giving you that advice because they've got a dog in the hunt, right? Because they have a stake in what you're saying. That's what his buddies did, right? You know, if you ever have a friend, we all need at least one. But if you have several, you're a gifted person, right? But if you ever have people in your life who will tell you what you need to hear and not necessarily what you want to hear, hang on to them, because you don't find many. You see, most of the time, we like to surround ourselves with people who tell us what we want to hear. Okay, that's not getting counsel, right? If you just surround yourself with people that tell you what you want to hear, that was his buddies. But I tell you what, Rehoboam didn't have an excuse. Why? He got good counsel. He just chose against it. So he knew better. Right? But if you think what do I take home from today? Well, one of the things you take home from today is, I'm here to tell you, be careful who you let give advice in your life, because it has far more impact on you than you can imagine. Okay? Advice on parenting. Advice on, you know, who you're dating, whom you're going to marry one day. It's incredible, all the advice, job type decisions, different things that go on all around you. You got people that you bounce things off of. And if you ever get one who's not there to tell you what you want to hear, but it'll truly tell you what they see, not saying they're always right, but they at least don't ever lose that person. Because yes, people, you can surround yourself with them. There are plenty of those. Amazing how that works. All right? So number two, the kingdom divides. Okay? The kingdom divides. Take a look at chapter 12 and verse 16. And when all Israel saw that the king did not listen to them, the people answered the king, What portion do we have in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Look now to your own house, David. So Israel went to their tents. But Rehoboam reigned over the people of Israel who lived in the cities of Judah. Then King Rehoboam sent Adoram. Now, poor Adoram. He doesn't know what he's getting into. Let's take a look at it. All right. Then King Rehoboam sent Adoram, who was the taskmaster, over the forced labor. Okay? And all Israel stoned him to death with stones. So in other words, okay, well, let's run this. Okay? And then King Rehoboam hurried to mount his chariot to flee to Jerusalem. So Israel has been in rebellion against the house of David until this day. And when all Israel heard that Jeroboam returned, they sent and they called him to the assembly, and they made him king over Israel. And there was none that followed the house of David but the tribe of Judah only. Now, so what happened was, Rehoboam, you know, he's king now. And he's told these people that I'm in charge, you're not in charge kind of thing. And then, so he's ready to get started in doing the stuff he wants to do. And so in order to do the stuff he wants to do and to build the stuff he wants to build, he needs forced labor. He needs to start. So he sends out the door, poor guy. Okay, I need you to go out and round up like you did for dad. Or if it's a new guy, hey, it's time to get started. Here's the first thing I want to do. Okay? And so he sends the door out. And what do the people do? Okay, they catch him and they stone him to death. Okay? And so basically what that means is the people are saying, no thanks. So the kingdom divides. And 10 tribes, there were 12, right? There were 10 tribes in what we call the northern part. And then the one tribe, Judah, and then kind of Benjamin. But Benjamin kind of got wiped out a little bit. You can read about it in Judges. We don't have time to talk about it now. So there were basically 2 tribes in the south, but really just one. This is kind of how you look at it. All right, but Judah, okay, Judah, that was what the southern was called, Judah. In fact, that's where we get the word Jew today. Because eventually the northern tribes were conquered and dispersed and intermarried. It's what's called, commonly known as the 10 lost tribes of Israel. The only ones that really survived that we know about were Judah or Jews. Okay? So that's where that all came from. Those were the ones that held together. Okay? They're the ones that continued on. But these northern ones, they kind of got way off track. And it all started with one selfish decision to look at these people and say, hey, listen, I'm not your servant, you're my servant. And it's incredible how that even till to this day continues to have impact. Amazing how it all works. Anyway, so that's kind of the picture of what this looked like when they did this. And so the split. Now here's something I want you to see. Let's just take a 2-minute interlude here, and this will help you when you read the Bible. If you've ever read 1st, 2nd Samuel, 1st, 2nd Kings, 1st, 2nd Chronicles, and it just doesn't make sense, this will help you. Because really, Israel, united Israel, only had 3 kings. They had Saul, David, and Solomon. And it's at this juncture when the kingdom splits, and you have 2 kings, and the northern part kept the name Israel. And the southern part kept the name, or took on the name Judah, or Jews. Right? And so you had down here, this was the one that stuck with the line of David. You know, Rehoboam, and then on through. And this line held together all the way through to the time of Mary and Joseph, who were descendants of David. And it hung true all the way through. Why? Why did God protect that line? Because that was the line of Jesus. Right? But I want you to know the northern kingdoms, they had their set of kings, and they did not have one king that was good. We'll find out why in just a minute. Okay? Now, in 722, the Assyrians came through and wiped out the northern kingdom, but the southern kingdom held. Okay? And the southern kingdom didn't until, I think it was 586 B.C., when Nebuchadnezzar came through, right, with the Babylonians, and they conquered the southern part and took them off. And that's where you get, it's during that exile time where they're conquered and carried off, but they stayed a distinct people group. That's where you get the book of Daniel, right, and Ezra, right, and Nehemiah, and some of those books or during that time after they're conquered. But here's something for you to understand. 1 and 2 Samuel is the story of Samuel, the last judge, and the people wanting a king, Saul and David. That's 1 and 2 Samuel. Now, 1 and 2 Kings, that charts, this is why this is so confusing, that charts both kings, the king of Judah and the king of Israel, for all the years. The book of 1 and 2 Chronicles only gives you a chart of the history of the kings of Judah, the southern part. Right? So when you read that, 1st, 2nd Chronicles and 1st, 2nd Kings are the same as far as the kings of Judah go. So that kind of helps you understand those books and understand kind of what happened with them. Now, so the kingdom divides, and the impact this have is pretty huge. In verse 21, which we don't have time to talk about, but in verse 21 through 24, I mean, Rehoboam comes back and he gets all the chariots together and he gets the armies together because Judah is the, I mean, it's the leadership tribe. It's the tribe that has all the generals, has all the, so Rehoboam's going to attack, you know, civil war. But then God sends somebody to Rehoboam and said, hey, listen, this is your fault. You made this decision. This is you are not to attack. And so he does it. Okay. But number three, and this is where we'll be done, but I want us to take time for you to understand that. Number three is what I'm going to call an unwise decision. Now, Jeroboam's the new king in the north. Okay? Jeroboam is up north, but he has a problem. Look at chapter 12 and verse 25. Then Jeroboam built Shechem in the hill country of Ephraim, and he lived there. And he went out from there, and he built Peniel. And Jeroboam said in his heart, now the kingdom will turn back to the house of David if this people go up to offer sacrifices to the temple of the Lord at Jerusalem. Then the heart of this people will turn again to the Lord, to Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they will kill me and return to Rehoboam, king of Judah. Now, Jeroboam begins thinking, okay, everything's fine now. Okay? He begins thinking, okay, everything's great now because the people are sick of, you know, Solomon and Solomon's son. But what about in a few years? The people, all of their lives have been used to traveling down to Jerusalem for Passover, for the Day of Atonement, for Pentecost, for all the different feasts. It's kind of like Jerusalem's the place where everybody goes and celebrates all the different things the Lord has told them to celebrate. And so he begins thinking to himself, if I don't do something here, I'm going to lose what I have. And so, this is interesting. So in other words, what do the people worship? That's the way to capture their heart. So, he's got to come up. Think about this. He's got to come up with a new system of worship so that he can hang on to the people so that they won't go down to Jerusalem. Now listen to this. This is interesting. You know what he does? He starts making it up as he goes. I mean, this is where it all starts. So many times what people worship 100 years from now is some guy who, for political expediency, made up a whole lot of stuff and got the people to start worshiping whatever. It's an incredible thing how this works. So let's take a look at what he did. Okay? Take a look now, if you will, in verse 28, it says, so the king took counsel. There's the word counsel again. In other words, he brought in people for advice. So what am I going to do about this problem, about the people keep going down to Jerusalem? What am I going to do? Here's what they did. So he took counsel. Look at this. He made two calves of gold. And he said to the people, you have gone up to Jerusalem long enough. Behold your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt. And he set one at Bethel, and he put the other at Dan. This thing became a sin, for the people went as far as Dan to be before one. And he also made temples on high places. Look at this. And he appointed priests from among all the people who were not of the Levites. Okay, here's what you do. I make these calves of gold, and I make them more centrally located. So Bethel is right here. Dan is up here. So it's much more convenient. Hey, you don't have to travel all the way down. You know what a pain that is, traveling that far to Jerusalem. Just go to your local one. And these calves of gold, we're going to call them Jehovah. Yahweh, right? I mean, this is the same thing, right? But, you know, who says that Judah has a corner on the market of who God is? So he puts these calves, calls them Jehovah, right? And puts one in one place, one in the other, and people would go to those, right? So he knew he had to change these things up. And it wound up being a mess. Temples in high places, and then he just began to make priests. of people who weren't Levites. That God had already said this. But see, here's something. You know, Jesus told us several things. And one thing that Jesus told us about worship that I think is a powerful thing. Jesus says that God looks for those to worship Him who will worship Him in spirit and in truth. Now, how do you worship? If God looks for people to worship in spirit and truth, what does that look like? Well, number one is worship in spirit. That is worship with who you are, with your emotions, with your heart. For some people, it can be very expressive. Depends on your personality. For others, it's not. But it's worship with your spirit. But also truth. It's not enough just to be sincere. It's to also know what the truth is. And so I'm sure Jeroboam, he just came up with a whole lot of stuff. And I'm sure a lot of people were sincere, but that doesn't make it right. Incredible how that works. All right. Let's take a look now, if you will, in verse 32. In verse 33. And Jeroboam appointed a feast on the 15th day of the 8th month, like the feast that was in Judah. Okay, if you like writing in your Bible, underline the phrase, like the feast that was in Judah. In other words, he's just kind of copying. Right? He's just kind of putting things together because he knows he has to do this. Now, understand that Jeroboam's not doing this out of conviction that it's right. He's doing it out of political expediency. Let's continue to read. All right. He offered sacrifices on the altar. So he did in Bethel, sacrificing to the calves he had made. And look at this. And he placed in Bethel the priests of the high places that he had made. He went up to the altar and he had made in Bethel on the 15th day of the 8th month, in the 8th month, in the month that that he devised from his own heart. I love it. Underline this phrase, devised in his own heart. In other words, he's making it up as he goes. He's thinking, hey, we're writing this thing. Let's just write it like we want it. Let's just have a good time with this. All right, let's continue reading. And he instituted a feast for the people, and he went up the altar to make offerings. Okay. 1 Kings chapter 13. Okay, just look at the screen on this one. Verse 33. After this thing, Jeroboam did not turn from his evil way. Look at this. But he made priests from the high places, again, from among all the people. Any who would, he ordained to be priests for the high places. Well, what does that mean? Hey, anybody want to be a priest? Meet me down here afterwards. All right? God had specifically said who and what it was supposed to be. But hey, if you've ever wanted to be a priest, then come right down here. We'll make you one today. And so he just kind of put this whole thing together. But he added political power to it, which made it a nightmare. But that is what happened. And he devised it from his heart. Now, as we think about this, in chapter 13 and verse 34, this will be the last thing I share with you. It says, and this thing became sin in the house of Jeroboam, so as to cut it off and to destroy it from the face of the earth. I want you to know that because of his decision, it wound up leading an entire, or at least part of a nation astray, and eventually led to their downfall. But I want you to think about this for a second. That's this decision up here. Jeroboam came to this crossroads of what am I going to do? If I don't come up with a different set of worship, then the people are going to go, they're going to go back down to Jerusalem. So I have to do this. But I ask you the question, how did we even get to this decision? Because you back it up to here when Rehoboam says, no, I'm in charge. I'm going to do what I want to do. It doesn't matter how it affects anybody else. If Rehoboam had made the decision right that he should have made, then you would have never gotten to this decision down here. So therefore, guys, we are not only responsible for the decision. This is a hard thing to hear, but I think you need to hear it. We are not only responsible for the decisions that we make, but we are also responsible for all of those that those decisions impact. That's a hard thing to hear. And the more authority and the more influence you have in this life, the more responsibility you have. And again, it's not an easy thing to hear, but it is the truth. It is the truth. Because the rest of the time, when you read in the book of 1 and 2 Kings about the nation of Israel, you will continue to hear Jeroboam's name. And it would say something like, and they continued in the sins of Jeroboam. And they continued in the sin of Jeroboam. Therefore, it went all the way back to the original of where it started. It's incredible how you think about it. Now, as I close, some things to learn. I always like to throw some things at the end. These are just kind of review things, but they're practical things that you can take home. Number one, be careful who you go to for counsel. Okay? Have and find people in your life that you can trust that will give you good advice, good counsel. Guys, it is a natural tendency for all of us to surround ourselves with people who will tell us what we want to hear. But I ask you the question, do you have people in your life that you know will tell you the truth? Or at least the way they see it. Now, you have to be careful to make sure that you don't go to counsel for somebody who has a stake in the decision you're making. Therefore, when Rehoboam went to his buddies and asked them counsel, why did they give him the counsel they gave him? Because they had a stake in it. They were all his buddies, right? They wanted to do now what they wanted to do. So that's the reason they gave him the counsel. The older guys were the one that gave him the true counsel. It's interesting how it works. In your life, you have people in your life that will share those things with you. All right? You know, I've done this for years. Obviously, I've been in ministry now for lots of years. I don't do near as much counseling as I used to. But I've done a whole lot in times past. And I've tried to always go with what, through the years of studying the Scriptures, I've tried to always share God's truth with people, even if I knew they were probably going to get up and storm out mad. Which has happened quite a few times. Because when anytime you tell truth to somebody that they don't want to hear, it's amazing how they turn it all on you. But I have made it a point that I'm going to tell you what I believe to be God's truth. I'm not infallible. That is, I'm going to make mistakes, so I'm not saying. But I am going to tell you this. My heart is to share that because I want that in my life. And I want to share it. I want to share it in humility and love because my concern is for you've got to keep these things. If you find these people in your life, because I've learned that everybody who gives advice to you has impact on you. So who do you let into your life, right? Number two, remember that your decisions are going to affect many more than yourself. Well, I just shared that with you. I don't have to bring it up again. But remember, our responsibilities are not only our decisions, but the impact that we have on others. Number three, truth does matter. I mean, our world is trying very hard, especially our higher systems of education are trying very hard to tell you that truth doesn't even exist. It's just relative to wherever you live, right? And truth can be one thing to one person, but it can be totally different to another. I don't believe that for a second. I believe truth is truth. If truth changes, then it wasn't the truth in the first place. Therefore, truth does matter. And you just can't make priests of anybody you want to. You can't just come up with a different system because it makes you feel better. You know, I found, you know, when you take a look here at what Jeroboam did, he basically told them, hey, don't go all the way down to Jerusalem. Why do you go all the way down to Jerusalem? Because God told them to. God said, this is the place that's going to be the worship, the sacrifice, all the things. No other place. So he went totally against it. But truth does matter. Remember, it does matter. No matter how sincere you are, truth does matter. You know, which brings me to number four. Guys, what is worship? You know, I've heard people say this, and I understand this, and part of this I agree with. But you don't worship God in a way that pleases you. But that's the way most people worship, right? Makes me feel good. Well, I ask you the question. These are questions that we probably need to do a whole series on, right? But I ask you the question, who's worship for? You don't have to answer that out loud, okay? It's an obvious one, right? It's worshiping who God is. Therefore, truth does matter. Spirit and truth, right? Therefore, I think that when Jeroboam set up this new, right, religion, he did it to appeal to the people's senses. Therefore, it's a lot more convenient. Hey, let me tell you what, we're going to have a whole lot more fun. Because if it's fun, God has to be in it, right? And you know what I can tell the people? Here's what I can tell the people. I can tell the people, hey, listen, if you give me $500, God has told me to tell you that within a year, it'll become $5,000 back to you. All right? Now, what does that appeal to? People's greed, exactly. Therefore, if you tell them that they can give $500 and God's going to give them $5,000 back, then you're appealing to their greed. And then they'll believe that that's, again, appeals to the senses. Oh, I could go on and on. Anybody heard that happening today? So when you put all this, you just kind of make it up as you go. It's not according to the truth. There's nowhere in the Scripture that it says that. Not even close. And yet it's told as truth. People believe it as truth. It's a lie. And even though they're sincere, they give $500 and are disappointed in God when the $5,000 doesn't come back. You don't make it up as you go. That's why truth matters. That's why what the Scriptures teach matter. It's an incredible thing because it's so much easier many times to go the easier way, to go the convenient way. I'm not always saying that just because it's convenient it makes it wrong. I'm not going there, so please don't hear that. But I am telling you this, that Jeroboam came up with something that led a whole nation astray because he started them on a path, because you're going to see through the weeks that started out kind of up here. But when you start out on the wrong road, it just kind of degenerates and degrades. And before long, within a few generations, you got Ahab and Jezebel. That's where this thing leads, to Ahab and Jezebel. If you know anything about them, we're going to talk about them here in a few weeks. And so, Judah down south, they had actually a handful of kings. The kings up in Israel, they didn't have one. Not one good. Anyway, we got to stop. So some things to learn. Things to learn just to put those together as far as counsel, as far as truth, as far as what worship is, and understanding what those things mean and the impact they have on us, because it impacts the way that who the God that we serve. Remember this. Worship is about serving God, not Him serving you. And that's a huge thing. If you can just remember that, that's a huge thing to take with you today. It's not about you. Okay? It's not about Him serving you. It's about you serving Him.